In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hoffman.
And this is Josh Knapp.
And thank you for joining us for a live program here at EMS Office.
We are live, aren't we?
Every Sunday, 7 p.m.
Everything we say right now is actually happening.
Well, in my mind, maybe. It's happening.
Listen, my mind's toast, Jim. I'm just sitting here. I'm going to babble.
I hear you. Well, we'll get a couple calls. I think we have a caller on hold right now. Actually, let me see if I can get them in, Josh, if you don't mind, because they've been on for a few minutes.
Yeah,
I don't want to keep
them
too long. Hi, who's on the line with us? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, who's this?
This is David Blevins.
Hey, David, how you doing?
Great.
Thanks for joining tonight. I appreciate it.
Hey, Dave, where are you from?
Guy.
Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville, Tennessee. How's the weather down there, man?
Well, I left the lake early today at about 93 degrees, and now here with you all.
Well, guys, I guess we'll just kind of kick it off a little bit, and the topic I kind of focus on tonight, because last week's topic, we talked a little bit about interfacility versus 911, and I'm trying to sort of just kind of get a feel for what some people out there think about some of the content, some of the situations, and one of them is urban EMS and rural EMS, and, I often see a lot of postings and a lot of commentary going on how, you know, rural is better and you know, because there's more patient contact, there's a longer transport time, it allows providers to have more contact with each patient and really see the, I guess, the fruits of their labor when they're treating a patient, assessing a patient, whereas the urban model, you know, hospitals are 5-10 minutes away. There's not a lot of time to do everything you might like to do. And you either have a mentality, too. Somebody mentioned on Twitter when I posted this out, they said, well, you know, the urban mentality times could be, well, why should I do, you know, X if the hospital is only 5 minutes away, the patient will make it there in time? You know, why do all these other things if, you know, the patient can do without it type thing?
Think that's an urban mentality?
Well, I mean, maybe for some people might have that mentality. I don't know. I mean, the flip side of that too is I think with rural EMS, sometimes you have issues when it comes to, I guess, like resources that are available to you. You've got a more volunteer type model going on there. You don't really have a fully paid system where you've got people who are staffing ambulances 24/7. You know, and then on top of that, you have hospitals like trauma centers, stroke centers, STEMI centers, things like that, that might be way, way further away than, let's say, in an urban setting where you can get the patient to more definitive care a little faster, and you maybe rely a little bit too much on helicopter transporting in a rural setting as well. I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think that it matters in the long run, or is there a definite benefit or disadvantage for one or the other?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, and Dave, feel free to just step on anything I say, or if you have a comment, like, you know, don't be too polite.
Yeah, you can jump on us anything.
I'm a pushy New Yorker, you know.
It's not a problem one bit. Don't worry about that.
Awesome. You know, well, you know, I was just – I'll tell you something. I just had sort of an attitude adjustment recently, Jim. You know, Last week, I called to the show from down in Baltimore. I'm back home today, and I had just finished the CC EMTP program at UMBC Baltimore, and that there was about 60 people in there from all around the country. A lot, and I mean, like, from as far away as Alaska, you know, we had folks come in and take the class. And what I found was, is that these guys, you know, you thought, hey, it's a transport class, it's critical care, you know, you're going to get the people who are, have done 911 maybe or just went into transport, but their sole focus was critical care transport. And what I found was almost the opposite of that. What I found was that a lot of these guys are in rural settings. A lot of them are helicopter or fixed wing, you know, air flight ambulance. And they come from the end of – they're the only pre-hospital care that's out there. So whether it's a car wreck on the highway in 911 or it's, you know, an interfacility transport, they're the ones that are going to be doing it. And I'm almost getting a feeling that in some cases, as hard as it is to say, the rural environment almost has an edge because, you know, to be on a air flight, you got to have some knowledge, you know, you got to have your wits about you. There's the first volley.
I'm going to go ahead and toss. And really, when I first got this topic, I started trying to go through both sides of the game. And having seen the last 8 years of my career, I was in the middle of a third largest city in Tennessee, and I've also worked smaller communities as well. And I'll tell you that it really – it's a toss-up because you've got longer transport time if you're a ground unit in the rural setting, so you get more time with the patients, get to do more. However, in the urban setting, you have higher population, you have wider range of responses, and typically higher trauma rates with shootings and stabbings in the urban setting. So even if you're with them in a short-term period, a lot of the stuff that you're transporting is more acute versus chronic medical illness. So really, either way you go, it's kind of a toss-up because both sides of the house have advantages and both sides have disadvantages. In the urban setting, you're only with those patients for 5 to 10 minutes, so you don't have the opportunity to establish, you know, multiple protocols on patients. And in the rural setting, you don't have the ability to have 10, 15 people with you at any given time to help out because rural settings have lower staffing levels than other places. So a lot of times you can be the one with that patient. So a lot of times what they do is they'll couple their response with a aeromedical service. That way they can take their ambulance and have a 10-minute transport time to an LZ, and that life flight team, that aeromedical team, can then take them on to the trauma center or medical institution that they need to go to. So really there's advantages and disadvantages on either side of the game. It's just all according to how we incorporate that as service directors and providers to make it a benefit to our people.
But how does that reflect back down to the skill level that hits patient, that actually affects patient care? And I got to say, I got to correct one thing. In the urban setting, it is not. It's not. The nearest hospital may be, you know, 10 minutes away. By driving or by, you know, by the crow flies or however, you know, the KDT or the computer wants to say it. But your time with that patient is, at minimum, it's 30, unless they fall down outside the ER and you're called to pick them up and bring them inside, your time is at minimum 40 minutes, 30 to 40 minutes with the patient. I mean, sometimes you can turn it around a little bit quicker, but not often. So you have some time to play. You know, there are some skills you can put into place. And, you know, with that said, there is something to be said for, you know, if you're getting 10 calls a night, that means a higher percentage of them, just by the law of numbers, is going to be real calls. And then your experience, you know, when you read, you know, 10 or 5 real EKGs a day, and do that every day for, you know, a 40, 50, 60-hour week, you got to get better than the guy who reads one or two of them a week.
But you look, and like you said, you do make a good point. You know, in an urban setting, you are from the time you first get on the scene to actually transporting into the hospital, you have a good amount of time. Now you go to a rural setting where you're with that, and you have an hour and a half to a 2-hour time with the patient. You know, you couple that together, and you've got somebody that's sitting there looking at an EKG and seeing any kind of regular rhythm changes during the transport time of that patient. So, you know, it's quantity versus quality. You know, you can be reading 10 a day, and that's good, but this guy's also reading one on a regular basis to see the trend of the patient, to see if what he's doing is increasing that patient's comfort level, or if it's deteriorating and he needs to do something else. So, like I said, both ways, you know, you get in the urban setting, you get more contacts, more opportunities to do stuff on different patients. The other one, you get more time to be with that one individual patient and see just how your treatments are going to help or hurt that patient.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I got Tim on the line with us tonight, too. Tim, are you there?
Hello.
Hey, Tim, how you doing?
Okay. The protocols that you operate under have to have a big effect on what you do patient care-wise, because
yeah,
even if you have short scene times and short transport times, you can have protocols that require a lot of understanding, you know, a lot of competence in order to be used properly and to be used well. And you have other places where they have very restrictive protocols and they view the paramedics as just EMTs who happen to have a little more written on their patch. They're not expected to do anything.
That's a great point, Tim, in the sense that I'm going to take it from the sense of not, you know, that of the restrictive protocols, but if you're in an area that pretty much requires you to at least go through, let's say, for a cardiac, the AHA, you know, tree of process, you know, there's not a little bit to do there. There's a lot to do. And when you're on, you know, a transport where you've got an hour and a half to do all of that, you know, you've got time to sort of worry it out. Where you've got a transport time of 10 or 15 minutes, you got to think fast on your feet. You got to make a decision, and you got to play that.
Well, it's not about the transport time so much as it is what you do on scene. You can have everything done before you get in the ambulance and not take an inappropriately long time on scene. You can rush the patient to the ambulance saying, well, I'll do it in my office, and it may be the wrong thing to do for the patient. Competence is about knowing where to do stuff and what to do.
Always remember that we always have to play that balance between our bosses and our and the system happy and doing the right thing.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
I don't believe in keeping the system happy. That my whole blog is about pointing out when the system is broken and when it needs to be broken even worse in order to start building it up and make it into something that is about the patients instead of about the people wearing brass.
Listen, Tim, I grew up stating, you know, with the motto, question authority, and, you know, always ask why, and, you know, go against the grain when you don't believe what they're saying is true. I totally get what you're saying, but, you know, you got to also keep in mind so many EMS around the country are working two or three jobs just to stay afloat, and they need to just to say, well, screw it. If you don't like the way I play, you know, go pick somebody else to play with.
Those aren't the only alternatives. It's not all or nothing. There is a lot in how you do it, and you get to change things by staying within the system, But staying within the system does not mean saying yes, sir, and doing what you're told. If that is the choice, then, you know, maybe you do need to get a different job, because if the system isn't going to change no matter what you do, all you're doing is contributing to the problem.
Well, I'm saying that it's more of a balancing act. It's not saying, yes, sir, oh, I have a 20-minute...
I agree it's a balancing act.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, oh, I have 20 minutes at the patient's house and then I better be in transport. I'm saying, you know, keep in mind that a certain amount of on-scene time is necessary for patient care. You would need to prioritize what you can do in the house with the patient and prioritize what you can do on the road en route to the hospital.
It depends on the patient. I've had patients where I've spent an hour on scene, and I've had patients where I've spent very little time on scene. It depends on what's right for the patient. I've always been able to justify it by saying this is about the patient.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Tim and Josh, I ask you guys, I mean, do you think in that, it doesn't matter if it's urban or rural, if, you know, as far as transport time goes, you know, if you're in an urban setting, does it make more sense to spend a little more time on scene and do what's right for the patient and then start transporting, as opposed to a rural setting when you know you have a long transport time, to start the transport as soon as possible and do all your patient care en route to a hospital? And which is best?
Does it matter what the setting is?
Yeah, it does matter what the setting is, because keep in mind, what are we doing? We are not definitive care. We are
sometimes
part
we
of
are.
The cha- well,
cardiac arrest. You don't transport them if you don't resuscitate them. So nobody's delivering further care at that point.
And systole is a stable rhythm for sure.
Hey, guys, I got somebody else on the line. I want to bring them in in case I got invited a few people tonight.
You got to jump in here and help me out, or you just going to watch the lunch show?
Who else is with us tonight on the line here? Hello?
Hey, Jim. It's Ram Duckworth.
Hey, Ram. How you doing?
Pretty good.
any thoughts on what we're talking about or what?
Much from what's otherwise been kicking around, it sounds like we've been kicking around a lot of ideas already. In terms of the last question you were just talking about, a time for transport, staying on scene versus getting in the bus and going, rural versus urban, I agree. I do think it makes a big difference, rural versus urban. You've got a lot of time on your hands, and when you're talking a rural transport as opposed to that decision-making process when you're urban, and you may be doing a little bit more on scene to give the hospital a heads up if you're talking about any of the alert criteria, trauma, STEMI, or cardiac.
Right.
Your partner can do that in the truck on the way.
Which that you mean the report? You talk about the report?
Notification.
Right.
Hi, we've got a trauma. Be there in 5 minutes.
Well, if you work in a system that will get a trauma team activated, then God bless you. You work in a much better system than I do. We've got to give them a little bit more information where I am.
That is a problem with the system if they don't trust the medics to let them know what is a trauma, and if they're second-guessing the medics on it. But that doesn't really change what patient care stuff needs to be done on scene. If you've got a chest pain patient, does it matter if you're 5 minutes from the hospital and in an urban setting, or if you're an hour from the hospital in a rural setting? You're going to do your initial IV and medications and 12-lead on scene.
Yeah, but, you know, and that's just the point. I mean, that's a great example, because we all know what's the big thing in cardiac care. Time is muscle. So if you're on scene and your initial assessment is this guy's having an MI or massive MI, and you know you're an hour out from the nearest, area of continuing or definitive care, your your job on behalf of the patient, in the patient's interest, is to get
to start treatment as quickly as possible.
Get diesel going as quickly as possible.
No, your priority is to start treatment. Your priority is not to waste fuel. Your priority is to start treatment.
You are
because
not wasting
the
fuel.
Most effective drug we can give is aspirin, which is given on scene, and by figuring out what's going on. How do you know they're having an MI if you don't do the 12-lead?
That's what I'm saying. The 12-lead and the aspirin, okay, you're on scene. Now you're on scene 5 minutes. You've got a chief complaint, 12-lead, and aspirin. Maybe 10 minutes if you're taking your time, all right? Now you know
are you
going to
start nitro?
Well, isn't it time to start to go and you can do all those treatments en route? Why would you want to take another 10, 15, 20 minutes on scene when you could use that putting
how long
asphalt,
does it take you to start
down
a line and give nitro? If it takes you 15 or 20 minutes to do that, I don't think we're talking about the same thing.
Well, I don't think we're talking about the same thing when you're referring to nitroglycerin as a treatment for chest pain, when you're not talking about transport and getting shortening the time to PCI or at least thrombolytics.
Well, how long does it take to start a line and give nitro? And are you, in a rural setting, not going to do that on scene?
Yeah, but you know what? Listen, you might not be in a situation
yes or no
where you want to start a nitro.
I think most rural setting people are going to end up are going to work with the transport option. They're going to try to start transporting as soon as possible. They might give the aspirin on scene, probably do a 12-lead to determine where the best hospital would be to transport the person. But I think most rural EMS providers are going to kind of aim towards getting to a hospital that can give more definitive care than we can in the ambulance, especially if it's very rural. If you're talking a good distance to a hospital by ground.
Well, the definitive care is in the hospital, even in the urban setting.
Yeah, but the urban setting, though, like Josh said, I mean, for the most part, you're maxing out at maybe 30, 40 minutes of patient contact, between on-scene time and transport time and all that, whereas the rural setting, you might have, an hour and a half, 2 hours before the patient gets to a hospital. And then you've got your resources as well. I mean, some hospitals, are further away, some of the bigger hospitals that can provide that type of a service, is much farther than, let's say, a rural setting where a lot of hospitals are more community-based type, type of hospital.
Okay, are we starting an IV on scene and giving nitro, or is that considered something that isn't worth doing because it's only the patient's pain?
That's not the thing that we're talking about here, Tim.
Are we starting a line and giving nitro on scene?
I don't think doing some initial interventions on scene, wherever you are, whether you're 10 minutes or an hour from the hospital, is a bad thing. But
what the conversation was about?
No.
You said we do things differently whether we're an hour from the hospital or 10 minutes from the hospital, and now you're saying you don't do the initial treatment that you would do on scene in a rural setting, the same in an urban setting. What more are you going to do in an urban setting that you wouldn't do in the rural setting?
I think you'd do less probably in an urban setting than you would in a rural setting. I hear a lot of a lot of them actually run out of protocol to do on the way to the
hospital. No, we're talking about on scene.
Oh, on scene time. Well, I mean, to me, I think, if you have a patient that you feel is having an MI, you're going
to
do as much as
you need
can
to do the 12 lead to find out if they're having the MI to determine what your destination is, right?
Right. Well,
so
that's
done on scene.
I agree with that. I mean, I can agree with that.
Is there a reason not to start a line and give the first nitro on scene?
Why can't you start the line and as you're wheeling the patient out, give the nitro? I mean,
that's doing it on scene, isn't it?
This is like splitting hairs. You know, there's
how long does it take to give a nitro?
But this is the thing. You might not.
You're the one splitting the hairs here. I said you're starting a line and giving a nitro. I didn't say you couldn't do it while you're putting the patient on the stretcher or in the stair chair or whatever means you're using to get the patient from where they are to the ambulance.
Yeah,
and you may be giving several nitro.
Yeah.
You may be giving several nitro on the way because
or you
it
may
be
no
a rather
nitro.
Complicated. Why?
Because they have an inferior wall.
Sure, but you know that because
all
of
right.
the 12 lead and because
exactly.
it's not
but
the right thing to do for the patient. It's not got anything to do with whether it's rural or urban. You're coming up with excuses to try to justify something that you can't justify.
Not at all. At the point that you have definitive knowledge of what is going on, it is in the patient's best interest to shorten the time however you can to definitive care. Period.
Well, does that change whether you're rural or urban?
If it's in a rural setting, I may wind up asking the patient more questions and doing my 12 lead in line while I'm transporting. If I know they're going to be transporting or we're leaning heavily in that direction, then yes, I'm going to be doing it because in an urban setting, you're going to have the priority on getting the 12 lead early because it's not on what we can do for treatment. It's on the amount of time that they're going to need to activate the team that's going to do PCI or give the thrombolytics. Whereas in a rural setting, I have more time in the back of my ambulance during that hour and a half ride, and that's going to be more than enough time when I do my 12 lead to be able to activate them.
Now, you're not going to do a 12 lead on scene for testing.
You know what, Tim? I actually might not. If the patient is presenting with crushing substernal chest pain, they're diaphoretic, they're showing other signs of poor perfusion, I may hustle them into the back of my ambulance and start all the care there. Yes.
But that's only about 50% effective for identifying an MI.
Yeah, but I have a good idea, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong on behalf of the patient. If I'm right,
on a coin flip.
And I've saved time for the
direction. But you're talking coin flip odds. You're assuming that you know what's going on, and you don't.
Most of our diagnosis is based on history and physical assessment, no?
You just said it was all based on physical assessment.
No, we have a history there, too.
What history?
The history of crushing substernal chest pain.
That's not history.
Recent history, but it's a history. He didn't call you 2 seconds ago. It didn't just start.
So if somebody calls you for an amputation, that's part of their medical history?
I
have a history of an amputation. I got something cut off before I called 911. That's not history. That's the current medical condition. Those are the chief complaint.
Yeah, let me split it here.
I mean, I think that we have to consider what we're doing treatment-wise. I mean, we have to work in our transport time into the overall, patient care. It has to be factored in there somewhere, whether it's short or long or the type of hospitals that are available to us. I mean,
is it appropriate to spend a lot of time on scene because we're close to the hospital and inappropriate because we're far from the hospital, or do we spend the right amount of time on scene for what's going on with the patient?
Well, I see what you're saying. I think what you're saying, Tim, as far as spending the right amount of time with the patient to put, due to the complaint and their assessment and what you're doing with them. But I just feel that, when you're in an urban setting, you kind of have that mindset that the hospitals aren't that far away. You're a more rural setting, you know that transport time is going to be extended. In the back of your mind, okay, you're thinking to yourself, I don't have all the time in the world to be sitting on scene doing every single thing for this patient. At some point, I need to start the wheels in motion to get this patient to the hospital.
Okay,
that's what
let's take somebody
up.
With a broken leg. They've got severe pain. If I've got a 5-minute ride to the hospital or a 5-hour ride to the hospital, is it appropriate to just load and go with minimal pain management? In both cases, I want to manage the pain before moving the patient. And the transport time doesn't matter. And I get doctors on the phone, or I used to, when I had to call for orders, and the first question is, how far from the hospital are you?
Right.
It doesn't matter. It depends on how quickly I get the pain managed. As long as they don't have anything life-threatening, limb-threatening, I am going to wait until I get the pain managed before moving the patient.
Now, Dave or Ron, what do you guys think? Do you feel there's definitely a different mindset for that as far as transport time goes? I mean,
well,
think about what Tim is saying as far as that goes.
In the urban and the rural setting, and listen to Tim and the discussion going on right now, one of the things that I think about is if I do have that patient, whether I've got the classic signs of a STEMI or if I'm going to the point of having a regular EKG or 12 lead on scene, I know that if I move this patient without starting some care, I'm going to increase blood pressure, I'm going to increase oxygen consumption, which is going to do more damage to the heart. So there are things that I need to do beforehand. Looking at the urban versus rural side, I know that if I'm in the urban side, I have a short period of time that I can do some of this stuff, provide some relief, get some oxygen, hopefully going back to those vessels that may be constricted to the point that we were able to dilate through medication. And also bring their pain level down, which is going to bring their BP down, bring their oxygen consumption down en route to the hospital. I know that from my on-scene time to through the door to the balloon time is still going to be minimal. That's great. Now, the other side on the rural side, we're talking about the fact that we're looking at an hour and a half, two-hour-long transport time. But I'll tell you that, and especially around here, we've had a large increase in the number of air medical services that are out there. One of the things that a lot of these guys are doing, once they have a confirmed STEMI, they're activating the system, and it's actually bringing a helicopter to them, which is going to deliver that patient to the emergency department and into the cath lab a lot earlier than simply transporting them, especially here recently with a lot of road conditions that we've had. You know, some of these guys thinking they have an hour-long emergency transport time have gotten stuck in a three-hour-long backup on the roadways because there are some very rural systems here. So by doing some of that stuff beforehand, we prepare the patient for whatever we're going to do, whether it's an urban setting where we have a quick access to the emergency department and into the cath lab, or whether we're going to activate an air medical service to meet us on scene. And a lot of those guys would prefer that they have IVs established and some of the medications on board so they can see how this patient's doing before they put them in the air and they become even more unstable than they may already be. So we got to look further than just us transporting these people an hour and a half on the roadway, because we know that that may not be the viable option. We may be having to provide some of this care to these in a rural setting, and then get them to a third service, such as an air medical service, before getting an emergency department.
Yeah, I think, I think a lot of the rural EMS, I think in a lot of places, the air medical option has been increasing, and I think, you know, that gets relied on a little bit too much. And, you know, my concern with that is that you don't always have that option with air medical, you know, weather and availability and all that. You know, you don't always have that, you know, that option of having the air medical at your fingertips. I think staffing it becomes an issue too in a rural setting, doesn't it? I mean, not all areas even have paramedics. A lot of them are just EMTs. Sometimes they're only volunteer EMTs. And, you know, that's when you're talking, you know, the transport has to get initiated sooner too, either to meet up with medics or get that patient to the hospital because of the lack of resources. Resources aren't as much.
And that's an interesting thing, Jim. I mean, do the handoffs that the rural world has to deal with on a regular basis affect patient care? Because every time, it's a little bit like telephone. Every time you give a patient history and give a patient report, a little bit gets lost in the shuffle. I mean, it's not meant to be, and in a perfect world it doesn't happen. But, you know, in reality, I'm sure, you know, the patient tells you something, you're telling the air flight something, the air flight's telling the hospital something. I'm sure it's not all of the exact same thing.
And that's one of the good things about the fact that our 12-lead systems now have transmission capability, so we can pass some of that information on beforehand and try to eliminate some of that information loss that is done through multiple services like that. And I'll agree that a lot of aeromedical services are being overutilized, and when service has to go in and actually transport that hour and a half, they focused on having that helicopter available and they don't have it. So it's one of those things that they still have to be prepared for it. But, we've got to make sure that the patients, because we know that as soon as we pick them up, put them on the stretcher, which is an uncomfortable situation for them, put them backwards in the back of an ambulance, turn on the lights and sirens, their body has physiologic changes to it that increases our oxygen consumption.
Stress
so we have
response.
To do something beforehand. We have to do something before that to try to decrease the oxygen consumption of the heart, or at least the oxygen demand, and that is sometimes that we've got to take that time to start an IV, start some whatever our medication of choice via our protocols is, to hopefully get some blood flow through some dilated vessels back into that heart and decrease the injury that's going on there. Now, we couple that with our transport times and how we're going to go from there. And that has to be in our thoughts. A lot of people get a tunnel vision where they're focused on solely, I've got this critical patient that's unstable, needing my help, needing to get to the hospital, and they're not thinking about, okay, we need to transport 5 minutes, or we need to transport via air. We've got a major snow system coming in. So you've got to be thinking, more than just patient care. You've got to be thinking about everything and how it fits into the overall outcome of this patient. And sometimes that is taking an extra 2 or 3 minutes to give some stuff on scene before you even transport.
And I don't think anybody here is suggesting anything other than that. I mean, there's a point when you sort of plan your whole system like a chess game. You plan 3 moves ahead, or at least if you're doing the right thing, you're planning 3 moves ahead. So you're taking this information, you're gathering this sort of view of your patient, and you're making that decision, do I spend the time and play on scene, or do I start my transport rolling and continue my treatment en route? Do I not even start any treatments, just throw them in the ambulance and do all my treatments en route? I mean, there's a balance and a prudent triage of care that has to occur in order to deliver good patient care.
Okay, does it matter, though, if you're rural or urban when you're making those decisions? If you're starting the treatment in the ambulance, you're starting the treatment after you're moving the patient. If you've got a CHF patient, do you wait for CPAP until you're in the ambulance? Do you wait for nitro until you're in the ambulance, when these are the most effective treatments you can give and they're what the hospital should be using? So it's not like they're delivering any more definitive care once you get to the hospital. You generally should have them improved by the time you get to the hospital.
I'm going to leave that to someone else, sir. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Ron, you want to jump in at all?
Did we lose everybody
I think
here?
When you're talking about packaging the patient, it's different from the large number of factors that can influence how much time you wind up spending on scene, including the need for calling additional resources to get the patient out. And I think part of the disagreement what we're having here is the different systems that we're picturing when we talk about rural versus urban. Myself, we do have the availability in our part of the Northeast for aeromedical transport, but it's not used very often in my side of the state, and in the other side of the state, it's used literally all the time, where they'll just stop ambulances and lock them in on scene until the helicopter gets there. So I couldn't agree more that the examples that were brought up about giving starting your IV and giving some of the medications for a cardiac patient, or doing pain control for a patient with a broken leg. Certainly, you want to do that regardless of whether the patient is going to be in a rural or an urban setting, or what the transport time is going to be looking like. The point that I'm looking at is, for a rural setting, when you know you're going to be doing a longer transport time, that there are going to be things that you can choose to do during that transport, as opposed to continuing to remain on scene and continuing to lengthen the transport portion of what we're doing, so that, you know, we're basically sitting on scene and attempting to do care, but we're just going to be lengthening that much time we're going to be staring at the patient on the way in.
If we're in an urban setting with the same patient, should we be spending the time on scene to do it then, or wouldn't it be better to do have the same approach?
Sometimes in an urban setting, when the hospital's right around the corner, it might be better to simply get them straight to the hospital. Again, depending on what our patient presentation is and what the capabilities of that local hospital are.
I don't
want to make the presumption that every urban hospital is going to be a high-capability facility.
Look, you have to choose
the right destination.
In any situation, you're going to be doing a certain amount of treatment, assessment and treatment on scene. I think in any situation. But even if you're on the highway and there's a rollover and the person's, you know, laying out there on the road just ready to be scooped up into an ambulance, you still got to get them onto the longboard. You still got to, you know, if they don't have
well,
that
that'll
airway,
end eventually.
You know.
He said longboard.
Yeah.
He's a masochist.
In this case, let's talk about a convenient way to carry the patient to the stretcher. Because, you know, the second you throw the stretcher across the muddy grass, the wheels get stuck. It's a mess. You know, this way you have something to throw the patient on. It may not be better for the patient, but you can pick the patient up and put them on it.
Okay, Ram said ignoring the extrication stuff from packaging the patient to get off scene, I think this falls in the same category. You know, there will be stuff that we do on scene. I had one patient a couple of years ago. He was in the parking lot of a hospital, had very badly lacerated arm. Less than a mile away is a trauma center, and the first thing was just pick him up and throw him on the stretcher, and we're going to do everything on the way because he's a trauma alert. I did not have my phone handy, and my partner did not have the numbers, so it had to be a surprise. We're here. And as far as I'm concerned, it was the right thing to do. He didn't get any IV.
Tim, let me just tell you, sometimes that happens even when you do give a note, you know? I mean, you give a note, and you get to the ED, and they're like,
oh yeah, I know
what
that.
You know, it's like, didn't you get the note? They said you got the note. You know,
well,
I think maybe in the rural study, you have more of an advantage, you have more of a chance to get that feedback if they get your note.
Hoping to drive around and
Could you repeat that?
You just said that.
You want us to repeat or dispatch to repeat it, Tim?
Yeah.
Not dispatch. Not a call.
I thought I heard you get ready to take an assignment there.
No, I'm still good.
All right.
What do you guys think? Listen, we only have maybe like 15 minutes or so, but I'm just wondering, when it comes to skills and frequency in a rural setting, do you guys feel that there is a disadvantage when it comes to that versus an urban setting because they're not getting to do IVs as much or intubations as much and things like that? Or does this come down to training?
Well, what about the urban settings where they have everybody a paramedic? You have a similar dilution of experience because you've got so many more people doing the same number of skills. It's something that we need to take into consideration and arrange for a way to make sure that they have the experience and the skills to do what needs to be done. The rural medics should be much more skilled than the urban medics, but they don't get as much opportunity to use their skills. It's how much they get to practice in between.
You mean like in training and stuff? like training scenarios?
Or just rotate them through at the closest appropriate hospital, which is something we should do in the urban setting too, but
yeah.
Rotate them through a burn unit so they get comfortable giving much larger doses of fentanyl. Rotate them through OBGYN so they get comfortable seeing how to deal with complications during childbirth. These are things that are rare calls in some places, and still we don't have a good way of keeping up the experience. So when it does happen, it's like, oh, yeah, I think I remember reading something about that once, or I saw something on a video once. And, I mean, I've delivered one baby in 20 years. I was there when my daughter was born, but I did not do anything.
You know, I mean,
she was cesarean.
I'll tell you something, Tim. Jeez, you're a strong man.
Well, I was sitting there holding the ex's hand. I was not watching while they were doing the cutting.
Yeah. just being there. Well, I guess they put in, you know, they anesthetize her well enough so she doesn't have to grab you. But that's all.
She had an
subject,
epidural. She was awake for it. She didn't feel the pain.
Wait. We're getting off subject here. I think that, and this is an interesting thing, because in my course, this was a lament of EMS from all around the country. And there are pockets that you would consider nirvana, where the medical director interfaces with the EMS, goes through their programs, knows what their training is, insists that they have so many live tubes per quarter. So if you haven't done a job where you've actually dropped a tube on a live person, you go to the OR and you stand in line with the medical students and you drop a live tube there. But these are the standards that certain unique medical directors put on their system, and not the standards that we share across the country, which I think brings
but
us to an old
less than
topic.
That competent. But is medical direction that is less than that, should we really call that competent medical direction?
Well,
it's
whether
what
we
the
want
system
to call it
can afford. We're dealing with the cheapest that we can afford and not with what we need to have. Because when it comes down to a patient harmed by a bad intubation, have you saved any money?
I agree with you on this point. Not on all points, but I agree with you on this point. This has been a lament of mine forever, is that...
That you don't agree with me?
No. No, that we don't give the due that we don't give the concern that is due EMS training, and we don't raise the standards across the whole country, much less in my particular area or wherever, whatever area you may work in. I we fall short of that, but I think part of that goes right back to where we are perceived in the medical community. And we're still, in many areas, considered outsiders to the medical community. At the hospital doors, that's, therein lies our no man's land. And that should not be.
There are lots of things that should be different in medicine. And our place is one that is not well understood, and there's not a lot of agreement on it. But we put up with low standards because we say it would be too expensive to do it differently. And that's just wrong. Why is it too expensive to do what's right for our patients?
I don't have the answer to that, dude. I don't.
Part of it is we're paid by Medicare according to rules they determine. Part of it is that, the people running EMS don't know what's important a lot of the time.
I think it's not that the people running EMS don't see what's important. I think the people who are making the decisions on what EMS gets funded don't understand the importance of EMS.
Yes. And we all have levels of what we consider to be good enough, and mine are a lot higher than most of the people. But I do things that a lot of people say, oh, no, you can't do that. That is not enough care. You know, part of providing good patient care is knowing when benign neglect is benign. And
Ron, what were you going to say?
I agree, and I think part of the problem is that there's that both medical and financial disconnect when you're talking about the medical directors working in the hospital systems versus the EMS, which are primarily not hospital-based, although obviously there are a few of those systems out there, and that they just get that gap there, and you're talking about the financial concerns. The medical directors and the hospital systems, if they're not directly plugged into EMS, it's just off another balance sheet. They're not going to ever be able to make that direct connection between an improved patient care system on the EMS end with improved patient outcomes and lowered hospital expenses.
Yeah, and let me just say something. I think it goes beyond the cost. I think it's an attitude. And I understand the money always factors into this, but honest to God, I think that where we stand in EMS is more of an attitude and more of a misunderstanding or more of a lack of understanding when it comes to the hospital side. And I'll relate one short story. When I was a paramedic student and you had to get a certain number of intubations in the OR before you were allowed to go in the field and do it pre-hospitally, I was sitting there and I was fighting elbow to elbow with these medical students to get my intubations. And the director of the head anesthesiologist, who was the director of who, you know, did intubations in the ER, basically told me flat out, because I went up to him and complained. I said, listen, every time I schedule a first surgery, you know, I get to do a tube, I get bumped in line for one of these students. And he looked at me and said flat out, listen, you're an EMS, you're not as important as these medical students. These guys have to do that. And I looked at him and I stared, I straight-faced, and I said, you're absolutely right. And just in case you live in the New York area, I'll be working in the New York area. So if it's a loved one that I happen to have to do an intubate, thankfully, it's not as important that I know what I'm doing. Within 20 minutes, I got 5 tubes.
Did he bring in his loved ones and let you tube them?
Not really, but I think the point was made. Go ahead.
Yes.
I was saying that I think something that luckily is going to move us more towards the type of world that Tim is talking about is above the individual medical directors and the hospitals they work for. I'm starting to see a lot more of a push from a lot of the accreditation organizations, statewide accreditation as well as JCO, that when they come in and they say, all right, you want your level 1-2 whatever trauma center, you want to be a certified chest pain center, you want to be a designated stroke center, we need to see as part of our check how you integrate with EMS. We want to see your EMS protocols, and there's a lot more focus on that kind of thing across the board, which is suddenly, from what I'm seeing, not just in my area but nationwide, perking up the hospitals to say, okay, now this is something that is important, and we can see the direct connection for it. And I agree with you. I didn't mean to sound before like I was trying to make too much of a financial comparison, but just I think it takes something like that for the hospital systems to see a direct connection that I agree they absolutely should see and should be pushed upwards from the medical directors. But I keep hearing these same stories over and over again that the outside certification organizations are coming into the hospitals. The hospital directors are pushing this down to the medical directors. And it's going to be a long time for that kind of a trickle down to work, but it's making me optimistic. I'm hoping it's something that'll help us in the long run.
That sounds great. And I'll tell you, I just completed a program that is making a major push to raise standards nationally and sort of demark a standard of care nationally in terms of a level of training. And I know, you know, a lot of people give the National Registry a hard time too. But, and I've said this before, it may not be the best stake, but at least it's a stake in the ground that people can point to and say, hey, there is a level of competency that is necessary to obtain. And if the kid jumps all over that, that level of competency falls far short of what we should actually have, and I'll agree with that, it's still a reach up for a majority of EMS around this country.
Agreed.
Yes.
Well, I think, Josh, we're all in urban. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely, having people spend time in the hospital to get more practice, we will get better relationships with the people in the hospital. We'll have better understanding of what we need to do to prepare patients for the care that will be continued in the hospital. Too much of EMS is, okay, I drop the patient off and I wash my hands of this. It's no longer my patient. That's wrong. And it's the medical director's patient the whole time. It's our patient.
Yeah. All right, listen, guys, I'm going to end it there. We only got about 3 minutes left, so I don't want to break into another subtopic. And then we won't have time to finish up. So I want to thank Rami and David, Tim, thanks for joining me. I appreciate you calling in tonight. I think we had a great discussion. I really appreciate your opinions and your points of view on this.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All righty.
Guys, we gotta dig into this further.
I'll make sure to, Tim, I'll post your blog up on the show notes. Rom, I'll look up your stuff. I got to get your details. I'll put your website up on the blog notes as well, so they can go check out some more about what you're up to and get some information on you as well. So thanks for calling me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Have a great night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
And have a good night.
Always welcome back anytime you want. Dave, do you have a Twitter account or anything like that? I know I have your information from when you did we did the EMS Grants webinar 2 weeks ago, so I'll pull that up and I'll post in the show notes too so people can go check out your Twitter page and your Facebook page there, all right?
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Have a great evening.
All right. Have a great night. Have a great weekend, guys. All right, listen, guys, again, you know, this is one of those shows we're not going to come up with a solution, you know, overnight. I'm hoping that it's going to get your thought process going a little bit. If you have some comments on your views on rural EMS versus urban EMS and, you know, what you think the advantages or disadvantages are, be sure to go ahead and post them in the comments below here at Blog Talk Radio, or you can head over to the blog at emsofficehours.com. On Wednesday, this show will be posted there Wednesday morning. You can go ahead and, of course, comment there as well. I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to the live show and also coming and joining me in the chat room as well. If I didn't get to you, I saw it was one or two people in the phone queue waiting for me to get a hold of them. If I did not get to you during the show, I apologize. Gets a little bit busy sometimes, so I don't want to get too many people talking over each other, so I apologize for that. If you want to be on the show and be a guest, just drop me an email. It's jhoffman@ems-safety.com. Let me know you're going to be popping in, and I will keep an eye out for you and make sure I get you on the air. So that's pretty much it, guys. As always, Jim Hoffman from EMS Office Hours. Until next week, stay safe.